When the most recent shooting incident occurred at the Capitol building, not widely understood was this. The screening system that took about 15 years to develop worked as it was designed to do. When deranged pastor Larry Dawson drew his gun, Capitol Hill staff and visitors appeared to know what to do. For more, Roll Call senior editor David Hawkins. And I think, David, we haven't seen much about this that you write about in your blog, but things worked as they had planned to work when this turns out nobody was killed in this incident, but it could have been bad.
Yes, it could have been. And up until the era before September 11th, this incident would have happened much closer to where members of Congress actually are working and walking and in their offices. Some listeners may remember that there was, in the late 1990s, there was a guy who started to go through the screening system into the Capitol that was just a few steps from the Speaker's office, and he took out a gun and he shot not one but two Capitol police officers with members of the Republican House leadership right in the next office. So that was one of the things that gave rise to the desire to build the Capitol Visitor Center. Obviously, the Visitor Center is very controversial. It went way, way over budget. It was expanded after September 11th with all kinds of additional bells and whistles. But the fundamental choice at that point was to create a visitor center that would make sure that people came into the Capitol complex essentially a block away. I actually measured it off. It's about 250 steps from the entrance where this incident with Mr. Dawson occurred last week and where the closest member of Congress works, almost a full city block away. And so he did what he was supposed to do. He didn't try and charge into one of the Capitol entrances per se. He went through the tourist screening zone. There are heavy doors to pass through. Then there's a big collection of police officers, magnetometers. It's like getting onto an airport. And even if he'd gotten through all that without this gun incident happening, he would have had to pass through yet another set of heavy metal doors, which would have delayed him a few seconds more. So this screening system, yes, it really did seem to work. Expensive. It was an expensive decision to make, but it played out exactly as the designers of it would have intended.
I guess we should point out, too, that shootings in the Capitol actually have a longer history going back to the 1950s.
That's right. There were a collection of Puerto Rican nationalists that actually got into the House gallery and fired from the spectators' gallery, the balcony that rings the House chamber, down onto the House floor. Several members were injured. Nobody died. Several pages and other functionaries were also hit by the gunfire. And from then on, that's sort of one way of launching the modern era of Capitol security, in which there's been this ongoing debate about balancing the security of the members versus their desire, their political desire, to be honest about it, to be seen as accessible to their constituents as possible. So after this thing in the 1950s, there was talk about putting up a bulletproof glass shield between the spectators' balcony and the House floor. That has never happened. That's come and gone as an idea several times since. But in the end, I mean, members of Congress, cynics would say, you know, for political reasons, but I think also because most members of Congress sort of do believe in the lowercase d of democracy and in being close to the people they represent, and the notion of actually putting up a glass wall between their debate and the spectators was seen as too much. But the notion of making sure that tourists come into the Capitol a city block away was not seen as too much. So it's a constant balancing act.
And for those of us that are professionally involved with Congress from time to time, people that have the journalism passes and so forth, or people that have to be there regularly, it still isn't all that bad getting in if you need to on a regular basis.
Oh, that's true. Yes. I mean, people who actually have business there can get in relatively easy. You still have to pass through the magnetometers, but you can. There are sort of concentric circles of security, and depending on what pass you have, you can get closer and closer to the members and to them walking around. But tourists, it's pretty easy. If you just go through the magnetometer like you would to get on an airplane, you can wander around and see a whole lot. And on plenty of days when Congress is in session, you can really watch it. You can go to hearings, and you can go to markups, and you can watch the chambers in action, and it is still pretty accessible.
Just don't try to get on one of the member elevators.
Don't try and get on one of the member elevators. That's right. That will sure shoot and get you pushed out by a security guard. That's one of the few places that the members can retreat when they are tired of talking to reporters or anybody else. That's sort of their magic escape hatch, is to get on a members-only elevator and be taken away.
We're speaking with CQ Roll Call senior editor David Hawkins. And another item that has come up this week, probably wouldn't have gotten as much attention had not recent events on the metro brought to light the fact that the administration is asking for $150 million for the D.C. metro system. And it looks like even the budget cutters or budget reluctance might go along this time, given all the problems that have surfaced on Metro.
I think it's going to be sort of a fascinating debate to watch play out, because Metro has a very powerful constituency in members of Congress, and even more importantly, their staff. There is one member of Congress who actually commutes to work with me from the Tenleytown Metro Station on the Red Line. But they're a rarity, but there are thousands of staffers who use Metro, and it is definitely a water cooler conversation on the Hill these days about the safety problems of Metro and the feeling of anxiety that it's not reliable, it doesn't come across as safe. So I think there's going to be a strong push, as you say, even from fiscal hawks to try and make this a top priority. They are, however, going to run into a pretty immovable object, which is the overall size of the discretionary domestic budget, and doing what this is called a plus-up in budget parlance, doing a big plus-up for Metro is going to require other spending on mass transit to be cut back. And anytime, you know, it's a push and a pull. There's no net gain in the spending, so whatever Metro gains is going to come out of the backs of some other mass transit systems elsewhere, and that'll be tough.
Because you have a lot of leading Democrats that tend to be coming from large urban areas in Chicago and in New York City. They've all got big transit problems that also need money.
They do. And then there's also, it is not the case that the mass transit money is a fixed silo and the highway money is a fixed silo. There are plenty of powerful Republicans from rural or suburban states who would rather take money away from mass transit and spend a little bit more on highways. So it's going to be a challenge. Ultimately, in the grand scheme of the domestic budget, even what Metro, the big increase that Metro is asking for this year, or that the president's asking for this year, is a relatively small amount in the grand scheme of the budget. It is in line with, I think, something relatively close to what Metro has received in other years. Metro had been cut back in past years. Metro has also lost a very important or is about to lose a very important advocate in Barbara Mikulski, the top Democrat on the Senate Appropriations Committee. So this will sort of be her swan song, trying to get Metro as much as it wants. And my guess is that she will use whatever goodwill she's got left at the end of her career to try and get Metro as much as it can get.
David Hawkins is senior editor at CQ Roll Call. As always, thanks for that update.
Thanks a lot.
And you can read more and share this interview with colleagues, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive, and click Share with Friends.